The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra.
Today, Arsenal. Young Gunners silence Udinese and Udinese sayers to keep quadruple dream alive and earn massive Champions League payout to stick under squeaky floorboard for a rainy day. Next up for Wenger's winners, Man United. But if a small selling club from northeast Italy can't stop the Londoners, what chance do the Red Devils have? We look at that and the weekend's other action in the Premier League as we ask, will Joey Barton start for QPR and will a little Norwich prove a dangerous thing for Chelsea? Also today, Scoop Dagestan. We get the real story on the Samuel Eto'o move. Holidays are overrated, what Jonathan Wilson did this summer. And Italy, stand by for empty stadia this weekend as Italian players go on strike, unless they decide not to, in which case, stand by for empty stadia this weekend. All of that and more in today's Football Weekly Extra. Hello, everybody. Welcome on board. Very special pod today. Some very special pod guest, Jonathan Wilson. Welcome Morning. Back.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you've had a busy summer.
Yeah, I have. Yeah. I've been in Argentina and Colombia for the Copa America, then the World Under-20s.
Of course. Excellent. Excellent. Paolo Bandini, what have you got?
Yeah, I've been in America on a really long holiday.
Okay, so, then. Yeah. And you're wearing a T-shirt that says, start your day the Amish way.
Yeah, yeah. I started my day the Amish way a few times in Philadelphia. It was delightful.
I dread to think what that involved. Barry Glendinning.
How are you, brother?
I was just going to say the same Gary Cook catchphrase to you.
Great minds.
Yeah, indeed so. Indeed so. That's really an iconic...
Should we have a ghetto-ish handshake as well? And then your personal assistant can sort of sashay out of the studio.
Barry's referring to the soon-to-be iconic moment when Gary Cook welcomed Sami Nasri, an enthusiastic and cheerful Sami Nasri, who just about said hello to Patrick Vieira as he wandered past him in the office, into his executive suite to discuss the terms of his new contract, which will see Sami's wildest dreams realised as he finally gets to play in front of some really passionate fans. I think there were one or two other details involved in the new contract, but that was the key thing Sami was explaining. Anyway, we'll come on to that very shortly. Sean Ingle, very kindly asking for questions for today. Gilles off the net says, do crabs think we walk sideways? Jonathan, you're a go-to guy.
I would imagine they probably do.
All
yeah.
right, then. Udinese Arsenal, Paolo. Crisis, what crisis?
Indeed, yeah, it's all fixed now. It was another entertaining game, actually. We've had two entertaining games between Udinese and Arsenal, and in the first half, at half-time, I think probably lots of Arsenal fans, like myself, were looking at it and thinking, well, this is only going to finish one way, and that was with Udinese coming through. But credit to Arsenal on this occasion, actually. You know, Wenger obviously did get things right at half-time. Rosicki coming on was an improvement over Frimpong, who seemed to be losing his head a little bit. But more importantly, just the whole team seemed to come together and things began to click and it worked well.
Was the key moment when Udinese were awarded the penalty and Di Natale, danger man Di Natale, stepped up and Chesney pulled off that miraculous save?
Probably yes, because obviously if that had gone in, it would have been a much more tense finish. But I mean, what a save it was! It was real. You know, it was one of those moments, and it's very easy to say with hindsight, but watching Chesney before that penalty, I just had this really strong feeling he was going to save it, because he just looked absolutely enormous in that goal. It was like a dad in the backyard sort of standing in front of the little goal which his kid's about to shoot into, except you know, a good dad would probably dive out of the way.
But yeah.
But it was a fantastic save, and I think obviously at that point it was a vulnerable moment for Arsenal. So
Mo Hoop says, AC Jimbo, still think Arsenal need a new keeper, James. Yeah, a bit of humble pie for Jimbo.
I think there's a lot of humble pie for a lot of media folk. There was a lot of journalists.
Yeah, you amongst them, Barry.
What?
You were saying on Monday their season could be over.
No, I said there's a very good chance they would lose.
Right. You said their season was going to be over.
I have not been critical of Wenger at all.
Right.
Since the season started. But quite a few journalists who... And it's been funny watching them pull U-turns on Twitter in their papers since last night, were clearly preparing to dance on Wenger's grave had they lost last night. And even if they had lost, I don't think it would have been the end of the world by any stretch of the imagination.
In the meantime, a bit of a shame that both Arsenal and Udinese can't go through, because it was a terrific game. AC/DC, it was second, as you say, second terrific game we've had from them, and AC/DC Milan saying, was this the best game of the season so far? Have you seen a better one yet this
week? Well, I think you're forgetting Arsenal nil, Newcastle nil, Arsenal nil. But I think it was interesting, because last season, we probably touched on it at the time, but Gazzetta dello Sport sort of voiced the Italian opinion at a certain stage where they said, God, how we wish we could have this Udinese team representing us in Europe instead of the muck that we have out there. So I think it was a real shame in a sense that they had to get such a tough draw and that they haven't been able to go onto the group stages and represent
it. They decided to sell off all their best players.
Well, they did, but they still gave a great account to themselves. Yeah. And this is the strength of Udinese, is they've always been able to replace players. And once again, they look to have made some very smart signings.
All right.
Udinese fascinate me as a team because I was, at the under-20s, one of the outstanding players was Luis Muriel, the Colombian forward. You look at who owns him, Udinese own him. They're already there. So I did a little bit more research on this. And Udinese have stakes in 110 players worldwide. Yeah. 110. Wow. They've got some kind of deal with Granada as well, I think, that Granada sort of are used as a training camp for them, effectively. Granada, who got promoted last season and are now in the top flight in Spain. But it's an extraordinary scouting setup they've got, that they do scout the whole world, and they do buy these players and have stakes in them. I'm not sure how legal that would be under Premier League rules with, in terms of third-party ownership and things, because they clearly don't own 100% of all 110 players, but they get through people, I mean, like Alexis Sanchez, like Muriel, like Kwadwo Asamoah.
Right, OK. Now, Man United next. For Arsenal, Man United, who've gone 33 games in the league now, unbeaten at home.
They've won 21 of their last 22 Premier League games at Old Trafford and won 5 of their last 6 against Arsenal at Old Trafford.
Arsenal have only won 3 of their last 19 visits to Old Trafford.
Me till I die.
Yeah. There's no Song, no Jovinho, no Frimpong, no Nasri. I mean, I could go on.
Go on.
Well, there's no...
Fabregas?
No Fabregas.
Liam Brady's gone.
Liam Brady, that's another Tony one. Bob
Adams.
Wilson. A couple of questions. Who's going to get a red card this time? And how bad is the scoreline going to be? Is there any question of Arsenal coming away with a result here?
I'm just going to say I'm pessimistic and leave it at that.
Mm. Did you see, Barry, Man United's performance against their last visitors on Monday night, Spurs?
I did, and they won 3-0, and it was probably not a fair reflection on Spurs, who I thought played very, very well and possibly flagged badly in the last 25 minutes, which would suggest there may be some concerns about their general fitness, and in particular the fitness of Van der Vaart, who seems unable to get match fit for 90 minutes. But I thought Spurs played very well, and it was a very good game.
But they still lost 3-0. And this against a Man United team that supposedly had a defensive line, a back line in crisis with Vidic out, with Ferdinand out.
Manchester United's defence is fine. Their goalkeeper is fine. And they have some very exciting young players.
Danny Welbeck. How about Welbeck's backheel assist for Anderson? Eh? James Horncastle posting in. Our top chum, James Horncastle, from somewhere exotic in Italian, perhaps. He says, York would have been proud of that. Balotelli would have been taken off. Yeah. Anyway, well, there was no Modric in that game, of course. Before I move on, actually, you all concur with Paolo's rather pessimistic view of Arsenal's chances at Old Trafford, Jonathan?
Yeah, and the Welbeck assist, one of the great things about it was when you see the replay from behind the goal, Rooney's arms are in the air before the ball even gets to Anderson. He's almost celebrating the assist for being that good.
Wow. Quite a team. Barry?
I would give Arsenal a chance if they didn't have so many players suspended. Mm. But no, I wouldn't bet on them.
All right. Okay. Now, Spurs were without Luka Modric, who had head in wrong place knack for that. Relativity making the point that it was rather strange how Luka Modric couldn't play over a contract dispute while Obi-John Michael, managed to play despite the fact that his father was being held for ransom by kidnappers. But there you go, eh? Makes you think. Well, Man City visiting in what many might say is the first real test of Roberto Mancini's new freewheeling tactical approach. Less defensive midfielders, more exciting attacking play. But do you recall the Spurs game at the start of last season when he turned up with a large vehicle and parked it in front of the goal and a nil-nil was played out for 90 long minutes?
It's going to be interesting to see what he does this time.
How optimistic are you, Barry?
Yeah, pretty optimistic on the strength of what I've seen so far.
Yeah,
I think also Spurs don't look a stable team at the minute. I think they look, I mean, I wouldn't say they're there for the taking, but I think there's a vulnerability there that possibly there wasn't at a similar stage last season.
Right. Lewis Tong asks, how on earth is Mancini going to keep Dzeko, Balotelli, Johnson, Nasri, Tevez, Aguero, Silva? I mean, I could go on. How is he going to keep them all happy?
Paying them massive wages.
Does it work though, Jonathan? Does it?
I don't know. I mean, I suspect he won't keep all of them happy. I don't think it's possible. But at the same time, they have a serious crack at winning four competitions this season, so there's plenty of spaces to go around.
Mm.
I think Dzeko has been interesting this season. From what I've seen, he appears to have found his form again.
Yeah.
And his link-up with Aguero seems much better than it ever was with Tevez.
Well, that's true. What do you think about the Spurs game with Man City?
I think City will probably win it narrowly.
Right, okay.
I can see a 2-1, 2-0, something like that.
I think it's an interesting question, though, the wages versus actually getting to play one. Just because you get players, for instance, like Sean Wright-Phillips and Craig Bellamy, who've taken that money and obviously been thrilled to get it, but now they find themselves in a position where they can't move on because no one else will pay them those wages. Mm. And it sort of shows you where people's priorities are, that they won't then go, oh, well, I've had a couple of great years on these wages, I'll just go and get less somewhere else and start playing football again. But actually, many footballers do seem to prefer to stay put and keep getting paid.
It's bizarre, that, isn't it?
Well, not really.
All right, then. Well,
I do wonder sometimes, though, if at some point the humiliation of being like a total outcast, not even being allowed to train with the first team, or, you know, apparently at Man City there's a little gaggle of outcasts who train together, and at some point, surely, the humiliation of doing that on a daily basis would become too much. You'd sort of look at your bank balance and go, I probably have enough. And it won't kill me to take a 20 or 30 grand a week pay cut. So I'm only, you know, earning 40 instead of 70 grand a week.
Is Craig Bellamy still owned by Man City?
Yes.
Okay, and is this the latest idea is that he might be moving to Liverpool, is that right?
Well, apparently Dalglish wants him, but City won't. Aren't prepared to give him away. They want a fee,
right,
but I think Liverpool aren't prepared to pay a fee.
Presumably, they also regard Liverpool as too important a rival to beef up with Bellamy.
Well, if they don't rate Bellamy, then why would that be an issue?
Well, I think they probably rate him, but just not as highly as they do the other billion top-class strikers they've managed to assemble. Anyway, well, there you go. All interesting questions there. And that brings us to the end of part one. Coming up in part two, all sorts of foreign stuff with our very own foreigner, Paolo Bandini. Right. Num1414, the Undisputed, which is a catchy moniker, you have to give him that, says, if Ligue 1 teams outperform Serie A teams this season by 1.4 coefficient points, Italy loses another Champions League spot. Paolo, is that right?
I don't know if it's exactly 1.4, but it's very possible that's right, because it isn't that big a gap, because the year that we're about to get knocked off next, Italy had about a 5-point advantage over France. But having said that, all of the years, even though it's only a narrow advantage each year, in every year currently on the schedule, Italy has outperformed France. So Ligue 1 clubs would have to buck their ideas up for it to happen still. But actually, I'm not certain that it's such a relevant one. It's not the same as when Germany overtook Italy and Italy actually lost a Champions League place.
Right.
Because I believe France have three Champions League places at the moment.
No, they have three, one of which is a playoff one.
Which is exactly what Italy have from now on. So actually, it won't in the immediate sense make a difference if they do.
Right. In your face, Num14, the Undisputed. Although we'll be hoving closer to Scotland, of course.
Yeah.
I say we, you. Nothing to do with me. There you go. Now, interesting week for the Italians. Udinese beaten at home by Arsenal. Napoli absolutely destroyed by Barcelona, 5-0. And a strike on, apparently. A perfect time to preview the new Serie A season, Paolo Bandini.
Well, yeah, I'm actually writing my preview blog for the Guardian today as well. So that could be a little bit... I suppose it'd be well timed, given that next week's an international break as well. That would be suitably a good fortnight, 3 weeks ahead.
Are you suggesting that they've planned this strike out to have an extra 3 weeks off?
Not quite. I know I sort of mentioned to you I had a little bit of a conspiracy theory about it beforehand, which is essentially what's happened is the owners. There's been this discussion about the collective bargaining agreement for a very long time. When we're talking back to the beginning of last season, when we nearly had strikes. It seems like most people thought there was pretty much the basis of an agreement in place last December. I mean, this deal has been sitting around with no one amending it particularly drastically since then. Now when the season's upon us, we've finally got the players saying, well, the league still got to sign it or we're not going to play. And the league had a vote yesterday and voted 18 clubs to do against signing it. So that's why we're in the position we're in. My conspiracy theory was based around some of the owners not being so happy with the fixture list as it was drawn up. Because famously, when the Italian fixture computer did its thing and threw out the fixtures, Aurelio De Laurentiis, who's the owner of Napoli, was so unhappy with the fixtures that he'd been given. You know, as Barry has commented before, you're going to play everyone twice, but he was so unhappy with the order of them that he stormed out of the meeting and, in quite spectacular style, seemed to basically just flag down a passing moped, hop on the back of it with apparently a stranger, and zoom off into the night.
You do that in Naples. I've done that in Naples.
I have to admit I haven't, but I'd be intrigued to hear about it.
No, you're trying to get somewhere and you just get a lift off someone on a scooter.
There you go.
They're quite, I mean, you know, four or five people can fit on those.
So I don't know if they're, that's my conspiracy theory, but that's not the serious reasons behind why it's happened. The reasons that are given for why we've reached this point is basically, it all relates to the same discussion we've been having for years about mobbing, about the about teams' right to differentiate
what
players.
What Barry was just saying about Man City, if you have players.
Exactly, yeah. If you've got players you don't like or you've got a problem with them, you can make them train separately from the main squad. Now, the players felt that the wording that was on this agreement now allowed managers to differentiate their training so you could sensibly have different players doing different things, but was at least tight enough to stop them from being frozen out. The owners were unhappy with that. There's a secondary issue, which is around a new tax that may get brought in Italy in the next
solidarity
few weeks.
Solidarity tax.
Yeah, for high earners. And there's a secondary issue there about who's supposed to be paying the solidarity tax. But that's a bit of a red herring, because really the issue is still about this.
All right, well, when the league finally gets underway, it might be this weekend, you never know.
So, you know, you'd like to think that, and you'd like to feel positive about it. But, you know, Galliani, who's obviously the Milan vice president, a couple of weeks ago was being pretty belligerent about it. He started saying, well, we're not afraid that the championship will be stopped. If necessary, we can wait till December. And basketball is running the same risk in the United States with a labour dispute involving NBA players. Well, most people in America right now think the NBA is going to miss a whole season.
All right. Cool. Barry, thumbs up from you, eh? All right. Just supposing they do start playing a football season over in Italy with Serie A then. Milan, the team to beat more than ever. Is that right?
People seem to be taking this tack that Milan have gained more than Inter over the summer. And obviously losing Eto'o is a blow. Inter are an old team, but Milan are not a young team either, actually. The team that was playing the day they won the title, I think, was over 30 years old. And, you know, they've put a lot of faith again. You know, new contracts, Gattuso, Van Bommel, Ambrosini, all these players are getting new contracts again. And, you know, I'm just not certain that there's going to be this fall-off that everyone expects from Inter, because actually I think having had a proper summer break, unlike last year when they won the treble and they had the demands of the Super Cup and they had players who'd gone far in the World Cup, I think that you may see a fresher Inter at the start of the season than we got last year.
I put it to you that they're having a tactical revolution, just like they tried to do under Benitez, only this time there's no Eto'o there to paper over the cracks like he did last season.
Yeah, and obviously it is difficult when you're talking about big change, and they are going to be playing 3-4-3, it looks like, under Gasperini, which is going to be a big difference. But I think Gasperini is just I think he's more the right coach than Benitez was at that time. Benitez tried to not do anything, whereas actually Gasperini is going to try and impose his own style. And I don't know, I think it's hard to draw anything from pre-season games. In pre-season, they've actually looked pretty decent in Inter, and I think that the players that are there are still good enough to be challenging. But the interesting one's going to be Napoli, actually, because they have strengthened again. You know, they've exactly the weakest area of their team was central midfield last season. They've gone out and addressed it. They've got Gökhan İnler from Udinese, who's a fantastic player. Got Gemma Elian as well, and you know, they brought in a couple of players to shore up the defence as well.
They do have a Champions League campaign going concurrently, though, as well.
Yes, which is actually the main reason.
We saw what that did to Tottenham last year.
Yeah, and that's actually the main reason De Laurentiis was quite so angry about the fixtures, is because they've thrown him against Inter and Milan in days after Champions League fixtures. So, yes, that could derail them, and it's going to be tough Champions League group two, because I believe they've been dumped in pot four.
They have. It's true. It's true. Juve, who've gone back to the future, bringing in Conte, and they've now got an Agnelli as president, as well. And some interesting signings there. Your Pirlo, your Vucinic, your Vidal. Mm. And
the brand new stadium, which they've done a very good job of selling so far.
Iaccherini as well, pacey winger coming in.
Good player, Iaccherini. Yeah. I think he's...
possibly Malouda too, they're saying today, Malouda.
Well, yeah. there'll be a lot more said over the next few weeks. We'll see. I'll believe it when I see it.
All right, so you think it's going to be Inter or Milan or Napoli?
I think the top three will be the three from last season, be the three challenging again, personally. I think Lazio have made good additions as well.
And they look good in the Europa League, didn't they?
Yeah, Gibril Sissé, seen this week holding an enormous eagle on the front page of Lazio Style magazine.
Lazio Style?
Yeah.
All right, I'm not a subscriber, but perhaps I should be. Lazio Style. Okay, because they absolutely tore Rabotnicki apart. I don't know if that's an impressive thing to do, is it?
Not really.
Okay, good.
It's good to tell me about
it. Better than their neighbours Roma did, the new Barca-Roma revolution there, got underway with a 1-0 defeat to Slovan Bratislava. And amid much crisis there, because Totti was left out of the starting lineup, and much crisis today because he looks like he might be out of the starting lineup again as they head towards the return match. Crucial return match. My word. Okay, Jonathan Wilson. Well, you just mentioned Eto leaving Inter. He's gone to... Now, you say this for me.
Anchi.
Yeah, and the next bit.
Makhachkala.
That's the one. It's in Dagestan, isn't it?
It is, but he won't be living in Dagestan.
He might not even be living in Russia sometime.
Well, there's rumours he might continue to live in Milan, which seems a ridiculous thing to me.
It's probably as close to that place you just said as Moscow is, where people
say... Well, Moscow is about 1,000 miles. It's not... At least then he'd be living with the rest of the squad, though, and training with the rest of the squad.
Okay, so this club, basically, they live and they train together in Moscow.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Moscow region rather than Moscow, but yeah.
Okay, in the Moscow region. And then they play, 1,500 kilometres away on the shores of the Caspian Sea?
That's right, in a 20,000-seater stadium.
Right.
Which, to be fair, is being redeveloped. I mean,
okay.
When Suleiman Kerimov took over one of the... He was basically given the club on condition he invested $200 million, part of which would be... that's purely in infrastructure, plus whatever he invested in players.
Oh, right. And part $200 million not on players. It's just
on infrastructure.
Wow.
And that's dollars, so £120 million. Pounds. And then part of that is building a 40,000-seater stadium.
Right. Now... Have they been doing this travel plan for a while of flying to and from the Moscow region?
Well, I mean, this is all new. I mean, he took over in January. So his level of investment, getting the type of players who aren't going to be happy to live in Dagestan.
Players like Yuri Zhirkov?
Anybody who's not actually from Dagestan to start with.
Okay. Is it very rough there?
Well, I don't think it's as bad as it was. And that's part of the reason why he's investing is... It's part of this whole thing in Russia of reaching out to the regions. Dagestan was affected by the conflict in Chechnya, and it's sort of to try and normalize Makhachkala to kind of make it seem like a normal city. If they've got a football team, then the logic is, well, everything must be all right. And you've seen the same. There's now three Caucasian teams in the Premier League. I mean, it may be that Kerimov, who is from Dagestan, feels very proud and really wants to invest in his local team. I would suggest he's probably been advised it might be wise to do that, given what's happened to other oligarchs. And I don't think it's coincidental that in the late 90s, when he made all his money, he was in partnership with Oleg Deripaska, who formerly was an investor in Kuban, and with Abramovich, who, although he hasn't invested in the Russian club, has invested in the National Academy.
He's reached out to the region of Chelsea.
He has, but also he's putting a load of money in terms of the World Cup bid, in terms of the Winter Olympics, so... They've all three of them have been advised to invest in sport in some way.
I read you making the same point in a blog for The Guardian. But does that work, basically, if you're saying, oh, well, we're reaching out and we're improving this area, but of course our players, it's not safe enough for them to actually live there and train there. It looks a bit like you're almost highlighting the fact that you're not spending time there.
That's a very fair point. I mean, I suspect that what they'd say would be that for so many teams in Moscow, we don't actually lose that much by not living near our home ground. We're saving travel to Moscow for the 7 or 8 games in the Moscow region, clearly is not an ideal situation. I think they can also make a claim that actually training facilities in Dagestan at the moment aren't all that, so it makes some kind of sense. But long term, I think it's not realistic to expect a team to kind of be based 1,000 miles from where they actually play.
How long have they been doing it for, this flying back and forth business?
Well, I mean, it only really became an issue at the beginning of the year when Kerimov took over. So,
and who else is in the team? So you've got Roberto Carlos. Is he still there?
Yeah, he's actually playing in the back of midfield now because he's not fast enough to play as a wing back.
Right.
And I think that's why the Eto transfer is so interesting. That previously the Russian league tends to be, you know, in terms of foreign players going there, it tends to be for young up-and-coming players, players who hadn't quite made it. Something like Diego Tardelli, who's played, I think, five times for Brazil, but realistically isn't in the national setup at the moment. It's a chance for him to make money. It's a chance for him to sort of re-establish himself in Europe. So, and Zhirkov is there as well. Now Zhirkov, he was very badly abused in the recent Russia v Serbia friendly by Russian ultras, into the extent that, you know, he was fairly evidently in tears when he left the pitch. And the logic behind that, apparently, is that he's perceived by these Russian nationalist ultras as having betrayed Russia by going to play for a Caucasian team. Now, there's obviously an optically pleasant racial element to that, but there's also, actually, I think, a financial element you can justify, which is that Moscow has pumped huge amounts of money into the Caucasian region to try and develop it. And I think Moscow fans quite legitimately say, well, why should my taxes go to pay the salary of Yuri Zhirkov or Samuel Eto'o?
Samuel Eto'o has suffered from racial abuse throughout his career and has been very outspoken against it. And he's obviously going to get loads more in Russia.
I think, you know, to be fair, I think it's likely he will be racially abused. Yeah, to say loads more, I think, is possibly stretching it.
But he is likely to be racially abused.
And Roberto Carlos has been two significant instances in the year. He's been there since January, so yeah.
They were raising a raised eyebrow in La Republic earlier because the manager, is it Gazi Gazhev?
Yeah.
Apparently told reporters that Eto'o will add colour to our team. I think the Italians thought that this was already a...
Right.
Or perhaps they're
being... I think that's been, that's obviously been translated from Russian.
Willful misinterpretation.
He clearly will add a dash of flair and exoticism, and you know, he's a celebrity name, so he gives them that, plus all he is as a player as well. So
to quote many posters, can Eto'o do it on a wet and windy night in Dagestan?
I think he can. I think he's actually one of the most intelligent footballers I've ever met.
Okay. Super stuff. Thanks, Jonathan, for that. You went to Colombia and the other place. Where did you go? Argentina, of course, for the...
I went to Singapore for holiday as well.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Because here I thought you hadn't had a holiday in 3 years, a bit like...
I'd had 5 days in Patagonia in the last 4 years, and I went to Singapore for a week.
Right.
I did nothing apart from eat, drink and sleep. And
okay.
Brilliant.
Yeah, okay.
More people should do that. I advise it.
Take holidays.
Yeah. Eat, drink and sleep.
Most people do.
Yeah. What did you make of the Under-20 World Cup and the Copa America, Jonathan? You've got about a sentence
on this one. I think both of them suffered a similar problem, which was the fancy teams went out in the quarterfinals.
Right. But Brazil won the Under-21.
Yeah, but I think they had... Yeah, they certainly were the best team to get to the semis, and they had some very good individuals. Oscar in midfield, Enrique, the centre-forward, who's just signed a new deal with São Paulo, having accused them of slavery and all that kind of nonsense, as players often do. And they're both clearly exceptionally talented players.
Do you ever get approached, Jonathan, by football clubs to go and find them some players?
No, but if any clubs want to, I'm more than happy.
Right.
It's funny you say that, because I was just reading on Zonal Marking's site, I think it was the second leg of the Spanish Super Cup. Real Madrid, in a bid to deal with Messi, pushed one of their centre-halves forward to sort of man mark, so they had three at the back, which Zonal Marking or Michael Cox pointed out was what Jonathan Wilson has suggested before last year's Champions League final as a possible way for Manchester United to overcome Barcelona. So do you ever get approached by clubs asking for tactical advice?
No, not at all. The one time a club has approached me, I won't say who the club, it was a Premier League club, they're still a Premier League club for now, which possibly gives you clues to who it is, but they asked me about a forward from Eastern Europe, and I rang a mate in a relevant country, got a report, and they signed him 3 days later. So whether that's significant or not, I don't know.
Right, and your cut was nothing. That's shocking.
It was a friend at the club, so I was helping out.
Have you never thought about taking this tactical knowledge and taking over like a small non-league side and getting them to play more advanced football than the teams around them?
Like Simon Clifford.
There's a huge difference between... watching a game and writing down what I think about it and actually trying to do it on a practical level. It's, you know, like the difference between
Jonathan.
No, it's the difference between a film critic and a film director. They're two very different jobs.
Yeah, the difference between a film critic and a film director is that one of them's actually tried it. That's all it takes.
Also, we established on Monday that Barry could whistle. So if you're not sure that you've got that sort of,
Barry could be
shouty part of it, you could do the tactics and Barry could do the...
Right.
I was at Charlton Reading the other night in the Carling Cup, and I'm pretty sure any of us in this room could sort out both defences, which were pretty dismal.
There you go. Bizarre the way they run football.
Just one other question, actually. Yeah. When you're doing your, say, a tactical preview of a game, are you working on the assumption that players are very good and do exactly what they're told?
Well, I see, this comes in down to the issue of, can you separate tactics out from other parts of a game? You can't. That, of course, is one of the big problems of it. One of the things you consider if you're doing a tactical preview is this player tactically disciplined? So somebody like Dani Alves, for instance, was really badly exposed for Brazil because his positional sense is atrocious. I mean, I know Sid disagrees with me about this, and we've had this row a million times, but I'll put my point again. Is that I think Dani Alves is a joke as a defender, but at Barcelona, he's a perfect player for that position because he's great getting forward, and their system with Busquets dropping in and Piqué moving to the right means he's covered. With Brazil, he just wasn't covered. And so Maicon is a much better player for Brazil, but Maicon at Barcelona wouldn't be so effective as Dani Alves is. So what was the question?
No, that's what I think too.
I think you've answered it satisfactorily.
Great, that's it for part two, you know. Coming up in a second, part three, uniquely enough, in which we'll be looking forward to one or two fixtures this weekend in the Premier League and hearing about how, this just in, the Spanish football season is back on. Part three then. Sid Lowe on the line with breaking news.
Hello, James. How are you?
Hi, Sid. This is an unexpected treat for me and for you because...
I mean, it's a treat for me, obviously, to hear from you, but I don't see why it's a treat from you to hear from me.
Well, because we didn't think we were going to have any Spanish chat in this Football Weekly Extra because there wasn't going to be any Spanish football. But this just
there
in.
There is, James. There is.
Hey!
Hallelujah.
God be praised. What happened?
Well, I think we could tell that something was going to happen because they were in negotiations all the way through yesterday until 5 o'clock in the morning. And frankly, if you're just not going to agree, you don't bother speaking for that long. I must confess, we haven't been given the full details of exactly what's been agreed just yet, because literally you are phoning me within about half an hour of it having been leaked out that there would be a league this weekend. The argument was over that emergency slush fund for players who haven't gone paid, so I can only assume that I know this from what was being said last night, that what made the meeting go on for so long was that the league had to provide a certain degree of proof, that they could pay this fee off and that this emergency fund would be binding. Mm. So I think that's what the final thing is. So in other words, the league must have basically bowed down to the Federation and said, OK, we will protect you against clubs that don't pay your players
right.
in the future.
Either that or they just broke for dinner. That could have taken till...
Well, no, I think more likely the reason they didn't even meet until yesterday afternoon, late afternoon, was probably more likely the traditional three-hour lunch followed by cigars, coffee and Pacharan.
All right, lovely. So, it's on this weekend, Sid. And is the most eye-catching fixture, is it this Barcelona-Villarreal clash?
Yeah, the trouble with Barcelona-Villarreal, which is, as you say, rightly, the most eye-catching fixture without any doubt at all, is it sort of feels like it's not part of this round of games because it's been moved to Monday night because, of course, Barcelona are in Monaco. They're already there. And so because of that, it feels like it's not part of this round of games. I would say in a way, now obviously the weekend will prove this right or wrong, but in a way the big winners of this are Granada. Now, Granada is true. Haven't been in the first division for 31 years and would really have liked to have started last week, and they were really looking forward to it. But this way, the opening weekend of fixtures starts with them at home. So 31 years they've waited to get back. They're at home. So instead of that brilliant first weekend, and it really was an exciting first weekend, Real Madrid Athletic, Malaga against Barcelona. I think we haven't really talked about Malaga yet either.
No.
Malaga-Barcelona, and the other one was the Seville derby, Betis-Sevilla. I think the big one in a way this weekend, at least emotionally, is quite probably Granada against Betis.
All right. Very, very quick answer then on Malaga. How much have they spent so far, and are they going to break the hegemony at the top of the Liga?
I think they can't break Real Madrid and Barcelona, but I think they can hopefully get a little closer to them, possibly not this year, maybe next. I think I'm right in saying that they've signed 10 players, and I think it's something like €58 million. I was down there last week talking to people at the club, and the project is, I think the project is genuinely exciting because I think it's not just throwing money at it wildly. I think they're very clear about what they want to do, very clear about how they want to structure it. And I think they've got very sensible, very intelligent people in control, which is a nice novelty.
Yeah, certainly is. Sid, that's fantastic. I better let you get on with your kind of on-the-spot reporting.
What I'm doing is I'm getting on a bus, which is pretending to be a tram.
All right, then. Good luck with that one. It's like in the Transformers movie.
I think there must be a Transformer.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Magnificent. Sid, enjoy the weekend. No more Rail Oviedo for you. And we'll catch up with you next week.
Fantastic. Cheers, James.
Cheers, Sid. Sid Lowe in Spain. They're very exciting news. The Liga strike is off. Renzo Olivieri, though, is still chained to the gatepost at the Italian Federation. Is that right?
He is. That's not actually about the strike.
No, I know. That's a separate issue.
But yes, yeah. we have Renzo Olivieri.
He's 68, is it? Well, how old is he now?
I think he might even be 70.
70?
Yeah, he's a manager and he's chained himself to the gates of the Italian Football Federation.
Miserable pictures of the poor chap.
Yeah, it's actually because of a possible change in the rules for managers in the Lega Dilettanti, which is, you know, an amateur structure, but obviously covers hundreds and hundreds of teams in Italy, which would basically mean they wouldn't have to go through the same registration process that they currently do. And he's not
chained
happy
himself
about that.
To a gate about it.
He thinks they're destroying the manager's profession.
All right, he's got himself a nice little inflatable cushion to sit on though, which is very good news. Anyway, there you go. Exciting weekend ahead in the Premier League. We talked about Spurs, Man City. We talked a little bit about Man United, Arsenal. But what about some of these other fixtures? Swansea are taking on Sunderland, eh? Sunderland, who come fresh from a Carling Cup defeat to Brighton. Jonathan, what's going on?
Well, the Carling Cup. Well, I don't know.
No, but all right. Leave the Carling Cup. What about that time-weird derby that you just lost last
weekend?
There's
two ways looking at it. The pessimistic way is to say there's four things something could conceivably have won this season.
Right.
The two derbies, the Carling Cup and the FA Cup. And in the space of 4 days, he managed to lose two of them.
Right.
Sunderland never do well in the Carling Cup. It's always just one of those things you notice at the start of the season and think, oh, that's finished again now.
Mm.
It'd be quite nice if we had a run in it, but we just never do. So. And Brighton are playing really well. It's one of those awkward fixtures. I think the bigger worry is just the absolute lack of flair, the absolute lack of composure, cutting edge, precision that they showed in the first two league games.
You worried about the trip to Swansea?
Yeah, I think they lose.
Right.
And I think they could lose quite heavily. I think it could be 3-0, 3-1, something like that.
Right. Barry?
Yeah, I'd agree. And their next game is Chelsea, is it?
Chelsea at home, yeah.
Yeah, so which they'd probably also lose.
All but right. What I don't understand is with the acquisitions over the summer, it looked to me like he's going to go for one up front, either 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3. And yet he keeps playing 4-4-2, which... or 4-4-1-1. And I just think that you're going to get no creativity through the middle if you're playing Catamol plus Colback or Catamol plus David Vaughan. I think you need to play two of them plus Sessegnon deeper as a midfielder. Or you play Sessegnon wide and Larsson wide and actually have two proper wingers.
Mm.
Against Brighton, Bruce picked a team that didn't have any strikers. Sessegnon, who was bought as a midfielder, was playing up front.
It seems very odd when... See, that's the ideal game to give G or to give...
That G looks a very interesting prospect. Gave Wickham a run out. I mean, they got on in the second half, but then it was too late.
What are the odds, RC and Small, on Steve Bruce being the first casualty managerially speaking of the season?
What are the odds?
Yeah, I mean...
I don't know what the odds are, I would imagine they're quite small.
I still back Steve Keane to go before him.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Steve Keane, whose Blackburn team are taking on
What
Everton.
I'm also slightly puzzled by is why Ryan Noble hasn't been given a chance. I mean, I'm not saying necessarily the start of this season. The end of last season, he'd scored hatfuls of goals in the reserves. He's big centre-forward, holds the ball up well. He would have been in the England under 20... Well, he was in the England 20 squad, but had to withdraw with a back injury. So, given Sunderland seem to have this shortfall of strikers, I don't understand why he's not even getting close to the side. I mean... You play well in the reserves, you score goals in the reserves, you look good holding the ball up in the reserves. What else are you meant to do?
Don't know.
The Carling Cup was quite interesting this week because you had Neil Warnock coming out after QPR got beaten saying he was glad, pleased that they'd won, which is understandable, but a bit of a kick in the teeth for the 5,000 fans who turned up.
Norwich lost as well, Swansea lost, so all the newly promoted
West Ham teams. Lost, yeah. And Sam Allardyce publicly blamed a 19-year-old debutant who got sent off for their defeat, which I thought was pretty low.
No, if you get sent off, you ask him for it.
19-year-old debutant?
Yeah, if you get sent off, it's your own fault. You might have a bad
against Aldershot.
You might have a bad game, in which case, okay, you should be sympathetic with a kid. If you get sent off,
That's a bit harsh.
But the Carling Cup, and people talk about the decline of the FA Cup and the way the Europa League's a bit of a shambles, but the Carling Cup clearly is a trophy whose lustre diminishes year on year.
I'm not sure about that. I think it's come back the last 4 or 5 years.
Do you
years.
Think so?
Well, because I think it's almost found a new role. There's probably a part of the general problem in football. The stockpiling of talent at the big clubs is such that actually to watch Arsenal's reserves or United's reserves is probably watching the 9th or 10th best team in the country.
And
like, you get to see young emerging talent, like the game I was at the other night, Ian Hart was playing. Gary O'Neill. Or is it Gary Doherty? One or the other, can't remember.
You mentioned QPR there, Barry. Flash My Girth says, is the QPR takeover just going to be ignored then? Well, no.
I find it very hard to get excited about takeovers, but yeah. Fernandez has, to his credit, reduced the price of tickets and season tickets.
He's
It'll
offered
be interesting.
To refund season tickets to anyone who's unhappy with your previous arrangement.
Yeah, I don't think he's offered to refund Bolton fans who travelled to QPR yet, though. That'll be interesting, because apparently Phil Gartside, the Bolton chairman, has, as soon as it was announced that Fernandez would be reducing the price of tickets, Gartside sort of went, well, will our fans get a refund? You know, they've already played.
Fair play to him, so he should.
Yeah. And apparently a lot of Bolton fans were complaining about having to pay so much money for such poor facilities.
Yeah.
But QPR, at the time we're recording, they haven't quite signed Joey Barton, but it looks like they're going to, despite Joey's plaintive tweeted pleas for another club to come in or for Newcastle to offer him a deal before he inked a contract with QPR. And they've said they want to buy 5 or 6 players.
But why do you think he might be unhappy with the idea of going to Rangers?
Because there's probably a very good chance they'll get relegated and they're not a very glamorous club. I suspect. He didn't specify in his tweet.
All right. That 140 character limit. Curses. Okay, but they do look a more robust outfit with him in the side, if indeed he does sign.
At the moment, yeah.
They look pretty good at Everton, to be fair, last week, and that was the game that was on live on Colombian TV.
Really? What did the Colombians make of it?
I don't know. Well, the commentators seem very excited. The commentators in Colombia seem very excited by anything. But no, they play well. I mean, I think Everton have got problems, but then you always say that at the start of the season. So.
But this season, perhaps?
Yeah,
more
possibly
than
more so, but. But no, QPR held the ball really well, passed it around nicely. I thought they looked, I mean, far better than they had the first week, obviously.
Everton are going to be at Ewood Park taking on sacking favourite Steve Keane's Blackburn Rovers.
Yeah, I mean, two
the Colombians are going to enjoy that.
I think they will.
Right, what is it you think that makes Colombian commentators so excited about everything they're watching?
Well, presumably too much coffee.
Right. That'll be it.
West
Brom,
something else, perhaps.
Altitude.
The dreadful stereotypes you have about South America.
Now, West Brom Stoke. Hey, West Brom have gone 0-2 in American parlance. Is their luck going to improve this week?
Well, they've played really well, haven't they? I mean, they've played Man United and Chelsea first up.
Mm.
And they've bossed bits of both games. So, I mean, if they keep playing like that, they'll be absolutely fine.
No.
But surely, going by your theory that 19-year-old debutants deserve to be publicly castigated by their managers for getting sent off. A team that plays well and loses both games is still losers and deserve nothing but opprobrium.
Well, that's a total non sequitur. Getting sent off is a lack of discipline rather than just kind of losing your head. West Brom have played well against two teams who are clearly better than them. If they can maintain that level of performance against Leicester
Stoke. I
wouldn't
suggest, on the strength of those performances, they were clearly better than them. West Brom deserved a point from each game, didn't get one. So
it's a bit different getting sent off, though. I mean, you're getting sent off, you're removing yourself from the game altogether rather than just not getting the result that you might have got.
All right, I'm going to move on now. Wolves are on top of the table alongside Man United and Man City. They're at Aston Villa. You might find that interesting, I don't know. In other news, Chelsea are taking on Norwich. Juan Mata now in the mix there for Chelsea. And also, how do you feel about Alvaro Pereira?
I think he's a really good player.
Yeah? Because Chelsea are now in for him. He was with Villas-Boas, of course, at Porto.
Yeah, I mean, he obviously knows him. But
can he play right or left back?
Left.
Yeah, but they need a right back, don't they?
Well, I assume he's going to play in midfield, isn't he?
Oh, is he?
I would have thought so. Yeah,
I thought he was a fullback.
He plays wing back.
Oh, okay.
And for Uruguay, he either played at wing back or as a left sided midfielder.
Right. I wonder if Chelsea know this.
I presume he. Well, I assume VS Boas knows this, having worked with him for several years.
Of course.
Well, a year and a bit.
Yeah.
So I would have thought he's there as a Malouda replacement.
Okay. Liverpool Bolton then. Yeah. Bolton haven't won there in decades at Anfield. So there you go.
Playing quite well at the beginning of the season, it seems, Bolton. I mean, you know, they're certainly playing. I think we've certainly said we get to the point where Owen Coyle has got them playing the sort of football he wants them to play, which is, you know, as a manager, that's the first step you need to take, isn't it? And then after that, you can, well, maybe you need to worry about results first. But it seems to me that it's a positive step for them to, that the manager's got them playing the way he wants them to play.
Well, that's certainly true. That is certainly true. And that brings us to the end of today's Football Weekly Extra. Many thanks to Jonathan Wilson. Where are you off to next, Jonathan?
Wandsworth.
Right, okay, good. Good luck with that. Barry Glendinning, thanks to you.
You're very welcome.
You're back on Monday, are you?
No, I'm actually away in Ireland for a few days.
Are you?
I won't be here on Monday.
All right. Oh, Barry's pod on Monday, interesting. Paolo Bandini,
cheers.
Many thanks to you. Enjoy the weekend, whatever it may bring, and you too, listener, as well as our guest producer, Matt Hill, who leaves us today after bravely covering for producer Ben's absence. Not sure what that was about. We'll find out next week, amongst other things. Have a lovely weekend. See you soon.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.